All right, Mix11, #CH9 Live, Twitter, tweet your questions. The great Bart DeSmet joins us today.
Hi.
How you doing, man?
Pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing great. So you are, you know, one of the most productive developers I've ever met.
If you say so.
The B-Sharp blog you've done is exceptional. People haven't seen that, you need to go check that out. You've done a lot of work on Link, you know, basically Link to anything. And you're here at Mix talking about RxJS.
Yes, exactly.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about Rx first?
Okay.
What is this stuff?
Yep. So Rx stands for Reactive Extensions. It's a technology to do event processing, basically. So we have this abstraction called an observable sequence, which basically is a sequence you can subscribe to. Like think, for example, about stock exchange data or Twitter data. You basically say, I subscribe to this thing, and then you get callbacks that say like, oh, something has changed, here's a new value for you.
Okay.
And we allow you to write queries on top of that. So you can write like firmware select kind of things, but much more complex things as well, including windowing operators, time-based operators, those kind of things.
Excellent. So would you call that link to events or link over streams?
Streams don't necessarily imply that they are about events, right? So I would rather call it link to events or link to event streams more specifically.
Link to event streams.
Because
sequences.
Like, yeah, if you say like link to events by itself, people might think .NET events.
Okay.
And .NET events are not compositional. You can't take a .NET event and then build a .NET event around it that's sort of this aware or a select or something without being, you know, entangled in a huge mess of state maintenance.
Okay.
So, we abstract over that by means of those event streams, which is iObservable, and hence we can do link on top of that because it's very compositional.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So let's, you know, you mentioned very compositional. Let's talk about JavaScript.
Yep.
And specifically, the implementation that you've done for Rx in JavaScript versus Rx in C#, the amount of code in the JavaScript case is greatly shrunken versus a C# brother. Why is that?
It's not that dramatic in terms of code size as you look at it. The biggest change sort of comes from the fact we have real concurrency happening in the CLR. So we have the iScheduler interface where you can schedule things. We have similar abstraction in JavaScript because they have timers, so there are ways to create concurrency. But we need to do lots of locking and those kind of things in the C# implementation. So we need to make sure that two concurrent streams are not stepping on each other's toes in the JavaScript version, that that burden is significantly reduced.
Interesting.
So that's actually where lots of the additional code comes from.
Can we talk a little bit about that? I mean, we talked briefly about threading in JavaScript. This isn't necessarily, it's somewhat related when you think about concurrent execution and concurrency. So talk a little bit about timers and the way you're using them to get concurrent.
Yeah, I should maybe first, start introducing, why we talk about concurrency at all in this context, right? So the thing is, if you look at event streams, well, events are being raised independently of the receiver. Like, you don't want to sit there, do a subscribe, and then be blocked till, data becomes available, because then, effectively, you're not doing event stream processing anymore. You're just making a call and waiting for things. So we need a way to introduce concurrency in the system. Now, not necessarily Rx itself needs to do that. Like, data sources might need to do so by themselves. And that's definitely the case if you look at, the UI. Somebody clicks on a button, well, the click event is being triggered by something in the system. And ultimately, it surfaces to your application, and you can react to it, hence the name Reactive Extensions. Now, in .NET, we have lots of ways of, doing this kind of scheduling and, introducing concurrency. So we have the abstraction called iScheduler, which you can slam on top of a lot of things, like the thread pool, the task pool, creating new threads, the WPF dispatcher, the WinForms dispatcher, synchronization context. And likely I'm forgetting some. Event loop scheduler is another one. So we have a lot of things that can be exposed as iSchedulers over there. In the world of JavaScript, you have basically, one common way that people use to sort of detach, their current execution from something that needs to happen in the future. It's like scheduling with time, which is by basically creating timers.
Okay.
So within Rx, you write something like, observable.timer or observable.timeout. We'll actually use the, timer infrastructure to do so. which is like the same thing as iScheduler there. It just happens you have far less because we don't have a way to create new threads in JavaScript.
Sure. And that's unfortunate, but you know, the
well, it depends what you want to do, right?
But there's reasons why that maybe threads are too heavyweight for the language. So, pound CH9 live, people, please ask questions. This is Bart DeSmet. You've seen him many times on Channel 9. You know, ask him some questions, Al. What are you doing? let's talk a little bit about one of the things you're famous for is link to Bart Simpson.
Oh, yes, I have.
Link to
the
anything.
Crazy thing there, yes.
Tell me a little bit about what is it about link that you so love? I mean, let's be honest. What is it about link that's so powerful in your mind?
I could answer that in a couple of ways. First of all, it's a very nice abstraction over things that historically have been pretty hard to deal with. Like if you look, for example, at Rx, which is like one specific case of link, I couldn't write that code myself. Like, you know, like to do an event and then basically time it out after 30 seconds and make sure everything goes according to plan. Well, turns out we do that in Rx, but you know the user doesn't have to care about that. And the abstraction is very nice in a sense that you have this type you start from, like IEnumerable or IObservable of T, and then you basically write those query operators on top of it, and you come back full circle to the original domain. You might have another IEnumerable of T or another IObservable of T. So it's a very fluent interface mechanism. And at the same time, it's very powerful in that you can interpret the execution as well. Like you can hook up an event provider or something that basically knows how to do, you know, natively filter things out or natively do certain query operations, like a query engine. So you can basically take the same syntactical sugar and basically translate it using expression trees and something behind the scenes. So on the surface of it, it's a very nice abstraction that goes even beyond querying if we, you know, go down that road.
Sure.
But essentially, you know, it's one thing that fits a lot of domains, and that's, you know, what's very exciting about it.
Absolutely. It's very expressive.
Very expressive.
And they have an implementation for JavaScript, right? Link.js. Have you played with it?
Not much.
Okay.
We actually happen to have, like, you know, our small version of that sitting around as well. Like, you know, it becomes a pretty popular thing for people to write that nowadays.
Sure.
But, you know, the language is also great in allowing those kind of fluent interfaces, you know. So, so yeah, it makes sense in a lot of domains to do that. And, you know, maybe somebody should start doing it, you know, using ATL and all sorts of C-style things. You know, it's totally doable to write something like that. The syntax might not be that nice, but, you know, you can do it.
Well, somebody has written in C++ using STL underneath, obviously, sort of a link kind of thing, and I can't remember the name of it, but implemented using, you know, operator overloading, obviously, is your best friend in that world, and templates.
Yep.
And it's actually a pretty interesting implementation. If people are interested in finding out more about that, go to Bing and type in link C++ and see what happens.
Yep. And they have Lambdas now.
And they have Lambdas. It's
coming along.
Absolutely, man. So what are you working on these days?
Oh, a couple of things.
Yeah.
We're still working hard on Rx, which is like the 80% time that I'm spending on that. And in parallel with that, we're doing our Link to Anything project, which is basically about giving people more tools and capabilities to write to its providers. Whether or not the providers are tied to enumerable kind of data sources or observable kind of data sources or anything else, there's a lot of, you know, common pain points that people come across when writing a provider. Now, the lucky thing is that only 1 in a million people need to do so. You know, like, you know, out of 1 million people, you don't have that many developers, and of that many developers, you don't have that many people who need to write a provider. Most people need to basically consume it.
Yeah.
But still, it's a good thing to reduce the friction and have some commonalities so that, you know, we can eliminate certain classes of problems that people run into when they build those kind of things.
Excellent.
And also taking it to the next stage, like you've seen things like link to Z3.
Yes.
Which is like link to the unexpected in some sense. Like, you know, it's what's link doing on top of that? And then you look close enough and you sort of see, well, it's really doing a filtering or it's doing a sorting. It's like just looking at it through different glasses, and you see that that syntax totally makes sense.
Absolutely. So. Now let's talk a little bit about when you think about link to X.
Yep.
Right. What is it about X that has to be present for you to be able to even be able to express anything over link, create the sort of the monadic stuff that you guys are doing? Talk to me about that. So when you say link to anything, is it really link to anything or link to anything that implements?
Modulo some constraints, yeah.
Yes.
Well, the domain obviously need to lend itself in some sense to whatever you're doing. It turns out there are a lot of domains that, you know, obey the laws of link so that you can actually do things. Like in my link to anything talk, I basically have some example of doing link over nullable types. And that's basically the maybe monads now. I'm using a dirty word here.
No, that's not a dirty word in channel 9, brother.
Okay, good. In that case. So basically, what's going on there is null propagation is an aspect of computation. Like a lot of people ask the C-sharp team, for example, about null propagating dot operators and null propagating everything. So that you can write something like dot question mark, and if the left-hand side is, you know, null, then it propagates the null, otherwise it executes the code. Mm. It turns out, you know, using monadic bind, which is the select many signature of link, you can actually totally do that. And so you can write something, it looks crazy, because, like, you know, that's not what it's intended for, but it shows the tremendous power that sort of monadic types and monadic binding actually has.
Absolutely.
So so that's the only constraint really on X. It's being capable to basically have multiple instances of the same type, sort of, and glue them together. Like typically it's like, you know, from product and products, from category and product of categories, do something. Mm. Well, as soon as you can write two from classes, you're sort of on that powerful mechanism of link. Now, of course, like if you can't do multiple froms because you don't have monadic bind, you can still shine if you basically just have from where select. You know, I would also consider that link to X. Okay. That's an X that works as well.
Excellent. Al, thank you. Are there any differences in core functionality, operators and such, between RxJS and Rx.net?
So the main difference is the basic idea is, you know, we start with Rx.net and we optimize a couple of things over there in some sense in terms of the capabilities that the platform has. So like if at some point we come around to need to use dynamic with C-sharp 4 and beyond, and that would be a great recipe for some Rx feature to use dynamic, well, we will do so. Even though we are available on .NET 3.5, on Silverlight 3, Silverlight 4, some platforms that might not support dynamic. So we do the best we can, and that's the same with JavaScript. It just happens to be that, you know, we can do almost everything in terms of operators. It's just those things that are not natively available, like, you know, the whole concurrency aspect.
Yeah.
Well, there we tune down a little. Other than that, there's some syntactical differences, of course.
Sure.
Like overloading of methods is something, well, in C-sharp we do that because C-sharp has that, and that's what, you know, people are used to. In JavaScript, typically, we have more descriptive names. Like, you will have things like generate and generate with time, even though, you know, in the C-sharp version, we could perfectly have just a generate method with a bunch of overloads, one of which takes an optional time selector parameter. Sure. And that's actually what we're about to do.
And you can't do that in JavaScript?
It's harder. You know, people, you know, we actually have it on the subscribe methods. So, okay, like, the subscribe method typically takes in an observer. But the first argument, if you look in RxJS and you do dot subscribe, you will actually see, well, the first parameter is an onNext function, or it's actually an observer. Mm. And, you know, we basically check things there and basically dynamically figure out the case you're in so that you still have the lightweight syntax if you don't want to pass in a complete observer. You can pass in simply a callback function without caring about onError and uncompleted handlers. So we do the best we can. But it shouldn't be that, you know, you have to have documentation that says, and if those three things are undefined, then we take the fourth thing and interpret it as that. Like, that becomes very ugly very soon. So,
sure.
So that's not the kind of thing we do. So,
make sure you use the triple equal 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 in JavaScript. Otherwise, you may be surprised. I'm sure you've already figured that out.
Oh, yes.
What do you think of the language? What do you think of JavaScript? I mean, you actually, I mean, in all transparency, you came into the RxJS project sort of in parallel when Mr. Van Gogh was working on it.
Yes, exactly.
And
he did most of the work, and now it's Matthew Podlasaki from Microsoft Consultancy, who's doing a lot of stuff on RxJS.
So what do you think?
So I've more been looking from an angle. No, I like everything that has functions as first-class constructs, you know, I like a lot.
Sure.
Now, I haven't, you know, been diving into the nitty-gritty details of JavaScript enough to have, you know, like the truly informed opinion about everything there. But, you know, the power that's available and the fact that we can do all of those things that we can do in Rx.net and in JavaScript as well is like a good proof of the powerful capabilities.
So that I want to ask a question.
Yeah, sure.
Can you really do everything?
Mm-hmm.
You can do everything in RxJS that you can do in Rx.net. Wow.
Yeah, that's basically on the operator level. That's what we aim for.
Excellent.
There are just things that are specific to .NET which have to do with dispatches and those kind of things. Well, they have specialized things over there. But, yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk a little bit about documentation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
One of the things that Doug Crockford has said is he loves RxJS, but he wants to read more about it now.
Uh-huh.
So what's going on in that front with your team?
Okay. Well, currently we're looking at those kind of things very hard. Like, you know, it's the same with the .NET version. We need to have better documentation there. And we're actually working on it at this point in time actively, you know, with doc writers and, you know, people who know how to write sentences, not just, you know, curly brace syntax. And so people are on it. Now we'll also have the VS Doc mechanism for JavaScript comments.
Okay.
So you will actually get IntelliSense over there in one of the coming versions.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Now, what about writing some code that will automatically take and create documents for you, right? This is what this function does.
Uh-huh.
And then maybe it hits some library or something that, I mean, that's just, here's the thing. You guys are devs.
Yep.
This is what I explain to people when they tell me, you know, man, I wish there was more documentation.
Mm-hmm.
You're a team of developers, and then you're run by Eric Meyer,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's writing code and dreaming all at the same time.
Yep.
So, it's going to be nice to see some more documentation come out.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, get the code working.
And it's
first.
The plain English kind of documentation, right? Because, like, in a .NET version, often the types help a lot. Like, you look at the signature of an operator, and you see it takes in an observable of observables, and out comes an observable. Well, how does that work? Well, it needs to flatten or merge things somehow. So from the types, you can start figuring things out, which is also kind of documentation in that world.
Sure.
Of course, if you're in an untyped world, well, you don't even have that.
Yes.
So so documentation definitely makes a lot of sense there.
Absolutely.
But we need it for the .NET version as well, so that we can more talk about like exact semantics of error cases and all of those things.
Yeah. And you know, now with sort of the advent of async in C# and VB, and I'd love to see like an async kind of thing also in JavaScript someday, because it's all about control flow.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with concurrency.
Exactly.
So... and it happens on one thread. So Al3891, how done is Rx? So now you're being put on the spot since you're from the Rx team. And he says .NET.
Yep.
What remains? API design, bug fixes, obviously. You have to do some documentation.
Yep.
Perf tuning. And then woo, link to Z3, which is actually phenomenal that you did that.
Yep. Man. Okay.
But can you?
Yeah, sure. So how done is Rx?
Yeah.
We're currently looking hard at the final shape of the first API, without saying like what, you know, when the first API comes along. But historically, we've always been, you know, doing design first and not be afraid of changing things in a dramatic way if we feel it's the better way to do so. Now, we see much more people, you know, taking up Rx, and it's growing every day. Like, you know, forums are very active, and people say, well, we want to have support and documentation and all of those things, and we value that a lot. So So the thing we're actively doing now is like, what's actually the stable subset of Rx, things that, you know, don't change anymore? Like, there are lots of things in there that haven't had the churn of the last couple of months or even last year. And then we have the experimental things. Like, for example, we implement await support for observables. Well, that's still CTP.
Sure.
And they might change the way that works. So, like, we can't call that, like, stable. Mm-hmm. We also have things like, you know, if we can do something with async lambdas, we might take advantage of that, but we can't call it stable because we're dependent on a feature that's not completely done yet.
Sure.
Same with some experiments. Like we might say, well, if we generalize those two operators in this Uber operator, maybe that's better overall design, but people still want the underlying operators, you know, the more specialized ones.
Sure.
For example, we saw that with buffering and windowing. At some point we actually found out that the general case of buffering is windowing. So buffering basically produces observables that contain lists, and the lists basically contain the elements for the buffer. Mm. A buffer could be based on time, it could be based on length, all those kind of things. So you can chop up a stream in multiple buffers. Mm. Now, you can also chop up a stream by having nested live streams. So you can basically say an observable becomes an observable of observables. And each inner observable is like a little window. Mm. And you can basically tune into it. You don't have to wait till the buffer is full before you can observe it.
Interesting.
So that's a very powerful thing to do live analysis of data.
Absolutely.
So at some point we said, well, if you have that, why would you need buffer with, you know, buffer with time, buffer with count? Maybe you can take away those operators because you can do it using the windowing operators. Turns out, like, to go from the windowing operators to the buffering operators, well, it's not as trivial as it seems to restore that. Mm. Now, we found a lot of things that we learned in that process is basically like we introduced an operator called toList, which asynchronously creates a list. And then we basically rebuilt those buffer operators on top of the window operators by composing our little ingredients the way that it should be done. Hmm. And now people have both worlds because people definitely want the buffers. It turns out, like, you know, people were screaming on the forum, where are the buffers? And in the process of doing so, we gained this great capability of having windowing operators. And I think we can now call that stable as well. And in parallel, we're now, you know, starting to look more into things like perf and can we, you know, reduce allocation sizes, those kind of things. But semantics go first, you know, when that's our design principle because it's a pretty hard domain. Mm. It makes sense to think very hard about the semantics of the operators first and then basically go into tuning like perf-related stuff and writing documentation, those kind of things.
Absolutely.
So, and we are now at that stage, so that's a cool thing.
Excellent. And, mm-hmm. How is Rx used in the real world?
Mm-hmm.
And what are you seeing in terms of usage patterns
yep.
mm-hmm. by, you know, the real developers, meaning yep. people, not real, but mm-hmm. not Microsoft, not mm-hmm. your team, not some
yes.
other people around Microsoft, yep. mm-hmm. outside?
Yep. We see, you know, people using it in the UI space because,
okay.
like, UI is a soup of events, right? You know, like, events come everywhere, and how do you coordinate that?
Sure.
Typically with things like web service calls or I.O. or other things that you might want to do asynchronously or whatever. So the composition level at you know, in those kind of APIs is you know, pretty compelling to use Rx for. Now, we also see it, you know, being taken up quite a bit in the financial industry mm-hmm. to analyze, you know, streams of, you know, stock trade analysis, those kind of things, which are like two big domains. And then more recently, I've seen a couple of people doing it in the system monitoring space, like, you know, saying, oh, there's a server going down. Well, you need to send out the event and, you know, people need to respond to it. Or you might want to say, like, well, maybe it's just a temporary thing. Like, I want to, you know, have a window on top of that and compute some running average. And if, like, the trend is that after 1 minute things don't look better, likely the system is really going down. Then I want to raise the red flag. So
sure.
this kind of analysis is something that is notoriously hard to do yourself in an efficient way
mm-hmm.
Without making mistakes around, you know, synchronization and all those kind of nasty things that you might want to think about if you do that. So Rx actually gives you the blueprints of doing that. You just need to compose the operators together.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's all about composition, man.
Yes. Yep.
So, Al, do you have any more questions, mm-hmm. brother man? Anyone else out there watching? You know, I guess it's that time of day, my man.
Oh, yes.
But of course, I have plenty of questions. So
mm-hmm.
we just talked a little bit about compositionality, composability.
Mm-hmm.
I like composability better. I think it's a better word.
Yeah, sure.
It's actually not a real world word,
mm-hmm.
but it makes sense. Let's
yeah.
talk about Rx and composability.
Mm-hmm.
You want to build composable systems.
Mm-hmm.
especially ones where you have lots of different things going on,
yep.
and you want to reason about them in an mm-hmm. expressive way. So talk to me a little bit about composability in Rx.
Yep. Okay. So the composition in Rx, if I go on the technical level here,
sure.
I invite people to take a look at .NET events and try to write something as simple as a WHERE method on top of that. How would you filter .NET events so that basically one of the criteria there is you start with events and you need to end up with events. So you still need to have the same primitive building block after the filtering operation. Mm. It turns out it's a pretty hard thing to do. So one of the problems there is you can't grab those .NET events. They're not first class. So that's a hard thing to basically get around. You need to create wrappers and those kind of things. And then basically, think about how you would basically create a new event out of an existing one.
Okay.
Again, you need to do wrappers and all of that. But I haven't even come to the hardest part here, which is how do you do the resource maintenance? How do you unsubscribe from that?
Yes.
So it becomes kind of problematic. Now, take another example of having multiple events, and their composition makes a lot of sense. If you have multiple instances of the same thing, how can you combine them together? That's what composing ultimately means.
Yes.
Bringing things together, whether it's function composition or it's composition of building blocks, it's basically the same thing. So say that you have two events and you want to merge them together. Well, you need to have event handlers to both. Then you need to have something that, listens to both events and tunnels out the data from both events. But then when you basically unhook that Uber event handler, that's the result of merging the two streams together, well, you need to unhook the individual handlers to the underlying, original events. So it becomes pretty hard to do that because, you don't have nice composition. So in Rx, you have composition both on the observable space. You can say, I have two observables. I glue them together using the merge operator, and I have a new observable of the same type T. And so that's composition on that level. You can basically glue those operators together. Now, we also have composition on the resource maintenance level, if you will. Mm. Because if you look at the subscribe method of observable, the thing it returns is an iDisposable.
Okay.
So basically, you don't need to remember the observer you're giving to the sequence in order to be able to unsubscribe. So compare it with the real world, right? If you subscribe to a magazine, what you do is, to subscribe, you basically send them a letter with your mailing address.
Yes.
That's your observer. That's basically a proxy for your letterbox.
Okay.
So you're giving that to them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what would you like to get back to unsubscribe? Well, if you say void, it means to unsubscribe, you need to send the letter again with your address to get rid of it.
Sure.
It makes much more sense that they send you, here's your subscription ID, here's a little card, mm-hmm. and please post this little card back at the point you say, I'm tired of this magazine.
Okay.
Which also means that if you have 50 magazines, the way to get rid of them is just basically keep a stack of all your subscriptions and drop all of them together in the mailbox. You can basically send that whole bundle. And that's
sure.
what we do with iDisposables. We say, if you subscribe to an observable sequence, you get a disposable back. If you subscribe to a merged sequence, under the hood, we basically subscribe to multiple sequences. And in order to unsubscribe, we just bundle those disposables together. So we have composition on iDisposable as well.
Excellent.
And so that's actually what
Perfect.
We mean with composition.
So we have two questions that mm-hmm. came in, but I think we're winding down now.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you,
one.
Al.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bart, have you looked at TPL data flow?
Oh, yes, briefly, yes.
Okay,
yeah.
And how do you think that relates to Rx?
Mm-hmm. So TPL data flow...
30 seconds.
Okay, 30 seconds. So if you look at it, the closest approximation is really subjects. Subjects in Rx are publish subscribe points,
mm-hmm.
Which are basically pass-through mechanisms where you publish data into and people can listen to it at the same time.
Mm.
And you can make those very efficient by doing nice optimizations. Now, the only thing is they don't compose very well. Subjects, if you take two subjects, how do you compose them? Are you composing on the input, on the output? What are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And you need to do a lot of manual plumbing and state maintenance. So if Rx decompose on observable sequences in TPL data flow, they basically compose on those building blocks of PubSub points, if you will.
Excellent. Bart, always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend.
My pleasure as well.
Enjoy Vegas.
Yeah, thank you.